I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, in anticipation of a new documentary that will air on WFYI, we're going to talk about a rich slice of Indianapolis and Indiana history, Crispus Attucks High School. We're going to talk about what Attucks has meant to the city, the state, and the nation, and hear fascinating stories about the many people who have passed through its halls and classrooms. My guests are documentary filmmaker Ted Green and Pat Payne, who served as the first director of the Crispus Attucks Museum and whose father was a member of the first class to graduate from Attucks. If you would like to join the conversation, please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on social media. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We got a fun show today. We are going to be talking about the history, legacy, and impact of Crispus Attucks High School. The springboard for the conversation is an upcoming documentary that's going to air on WFYI about Attucks. If you would like to join the conversation, if you have a question about Attucks, or if you have, more important, if you have an Attucks story you would like to tell, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are the filmmaker behind the documentary, Ted Green, and Pat Payne, who in addition to being in the documentary, was the first director of the Crispus Attucks Museum. Her father was a member of the first graduating class from Attucks, and I understand her uncle is the oldest living Attucks graduate, so there are deep, deep, deep roots there. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks very much, John.
Well, it's good to have you both here. Ted, I'm going to start with you. I just want to talk a little bit about how you came to do a documentary on Attucks. Could you walk me through the path of deciding that you wanted to, because you've done documentaries, you've done Roger Brown, you know other seminal figures in Indiana. What brought you to Attucks?
Well, actually, it was started about 11 years ago when I was at the Indianapolis Star, and we did a big print project on the 50th anniversary of the 1955 state championship, the first Attucks won, the first state championship for a black team anywhere in the country. And part of that, the best part of that, was we had a big town hall meeting in the auditorium of the school, sort of about race relations then and now and where everything had come. And beforehand, I was an absolute wreck. I mean, I was a newspaper hack. I'd never done anything like that in my life, and so I'm pacing the halls, wringing my hands, and I saw something that has never left me, is all these graduates, they came early, and they brought their kids, and they were there walking the halls, but they were there to look at the class pictures that hang on the walls. It's really something to see if you haven't been over there. From 1928 on, all the class pictures are lined, one after the other, and they're big. They're, you know, 4 feet wide, maybe 3 feet high. Mm-hmm. And these graduates would look at the pictures, and they'd point to their kids. They'd point, and they'd look at their kids, and they'd say, look, there's my mom, and there's my dad. And they'd walk back about 20 years, and they'd say, and there's my grandpa, and there's my grandmother, and there's our neighbor from down the street. And it hit me right then and there, 10 minutes before my big show, that in a lot of ways I'd done the wrong story. I mean, basketball is an amazing part of Crispus Attucks history. I mean, it deserves all it gets. But that school meant so much more to the African-American community and to the city. And I vowed right then and there, if I ever got another chance, I would try to do it right. And so here we are.
So, Pat, as someone who's obviously part of the Attucks experience, tell me what it means to be inside Attucks.
Well, the ironic part is that I am one of the persons that did not graduate from Attucks. I graduated from Shortridge High School, but
another storied school here in the city.
I'm sorry?
Another storied school here in the city.
Yes, another storied school. But as African Americans, we all owned Crispus Attucks, whether we went there or not. As you have already said, my father was in the first class, and my mother was in the second class, graduating from Attucks. And then all of my relatives were scattered throughout various other years. But the amazing part of this story is how the students took lemons and made lemonade out of what was supposed to be a very negative experience. And what Ted Green has done is taken a story that has lied dormant, because whenever you heard the word Crispus Attucks, all you thought about was Oscar Robertson and basketball championship. But he has identified and brought out the dormant story of Crispus Attucks in terms of the oppression that was going on at that time. But through the genius of what Ted has done, we will now see the true story of Crispus Attucks.
What did Crispus Attucks mean to African Americans in Indianapolis? And I'll ask that to both of you, but I'll start with Pat on that one.
What it meant was teachers, who I call professors, because many of those teachers were recruited to the school by principals who had the school at heart. And so they would go out and recruit teachers to come who could not get jobs in the university. So they had PhDs and master's degrees, and that kind of experience is what they brought to the students. But not only that, they did not, failure wasn't an option. Let me put it like that. Failure was not an option for the students that went to Crispus Attucks. You didn't see teachers who left the building as soon as the closing bell rang. They were still there calling universities to make sure that these students, when they left Crispus Attucks, would move on to a college experience. And so it was very different from what I experienced at Shortridge High School.
Ted.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in on this, too. You know, as any skeptical journalist would do, I was a little, I wasn't sure about all these stories I'd heard about how great the Attucks faculty was, especially in the early years. Well, lo and behold, when I did my research, it turned out to be even greater than I had imagined. And here's where I try to put myself inside this story. In 1926, there were about 800 black high school students in the city, spread through the three schools, Shortridge, Manual, and Tech. And for the most part, I mean, these students were sitting in the back of the room. They weren't allowed to be involved in student government. They weren't allowed to be involved in sports or any clubs. I mean, they were very rarely called upon. You know, we are committed to educate. We're not committed. We have to educate these people, but we're not going to put a lot of effort into it. That might sound tough, but I think it's true. Mm-hmm. And then here comes 1927, and all of a sudden these kids are sitting in the front row, and there they have Dr. John Morton Finney, who is a Buffalo Soldier. You know, he ends up living to 108 and has 12 degrees and speaks six languages. He suffered no fools, I can assure you that. And now these kids are in the front row, and they have people like John Morton Finney and Francis Stout getting in their face and demanding more from them than had ever been demanded before. I mean, that had to be just an incredible transition, and I think it was very rough on a lot of them. But what it ended up doing was just lifting up the African-American community in a way that I don't think anything else could have at the time.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Crispus Attucks High School, its rich history and legacy here on No Limits, in anticipation of a new documentary that's going to be airing on WFYI in the next few months. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions about Attucks or you have Attucks stories to tell, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook. at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. You know, in many ways, and Pat, you alluded to this a couple of minutes ago. You said it could have been a source of pain because addicts at its level, at its most basic level, was a symbol of segregation.
Mm-hmm. It was a symbol of racism. It was a symbol of oppression. But the teachers there, the administrators there, would not allow that to get in the way of educating these students. And that was the main thing that these students were there for, and they made sure. I'm telling you, they could not even come into a class late because the story goes that Mr. Lane, who was one of the prominent principals there, he would be standing in the hall looking at his watch saying, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes to get to class. I mean, they took everything very, very seriously to prepare these students in high school for whatever the next level was of their education. You could not get away with anything because the teachers went to the same church as the parents did. They lived in the same neighborhood as the same parents as the parents did. So this was a factor that made all the difference in the experience of Christmas Addicts.
How quickly did it become that kind of symbol of pride, though, rather than oppression, as it were? I'll start with you, Pat, but I want to hear Ted's thoughts on this, too.
Yes. Ted?
No, Pat, I'd like to hear your thoughts first. How quickly did that, did it make that transition?
How quickly it became a symbol of pride.
Yeah, yeah, because there is a real spirit of addicts.
Oh, yeah, there is a spirit of addicts. And I think that the pride came in knowing, just going to class and knowing that you are really learning something, which was very different from the experiences that the students had before they came to Christmas Addicts. For instance, my father was going to Tech High School, but when Christmas Addicts opened, he had to come out of Tech High School, and I heard this story so many times from my father, and walk to Christmas Addicts because the family was too poor for them to have any other kind of transportation. So every time I was asking for a new pair of shoes, he would remind me, we had to walk, and not only did we have to walk, I had to wear my mother's shoes sometimes so that I could get to Christmas Addicts. I mean, that was the determination and the perseverance that those students had, and it was reinforced in them, not only at the school, but in the home also. So the basketball legacy is certainly something to be proud of, but even more than that was the perseverance that was instilled in these students by that experience.
Ted?
I think it was instilled in day one under Principal Matthias Nolcox, who hired these great teachers and imbued them with the idea that, hey, we are on a mission here to prove something. And they made no bones about it. I mean, a lot of the oldest graduates said that the teachers would say, listen, this is just the way it is. We're going to take none of your excuses. I don't care how far you have to walk or anything like that.
That's right.
And the fact is, you're going to have to work twice as hard. It sounds trite, but it's true. Twice as hard to have half the chance. And I think that pride came out, and you can hear it in old audio clips you can find at various places, archives around town, is early on, it's like, you know what? This isn't so bad. This is actually pretty good. This is us. We are going to show people what we can do. And if I can, I want to give a quick shout out before I'm forgetting it too, because Pat was talking about her father and her uncle, Elman Myers, is indeed the oldest living graduate. He turns 102 on Saturday, and I will be delighted to be going to the party. But he was one of those early people, and he just talks about how good he felt to go to school there every day. And that hit me.
Was that, you're saying, Ted, then, that it was almost an immediate thing in that they stopped thinking this is a place where we're being sent and made the pivot and said instead, this is ours. This is something we can we can build.
In fact, you can see that in a Recorder column that came out, I think, the day the school opened, certainly that year, saying, look, we didn't want the school. We fought against the school. And the African-American community did fight against that school. Mm-hmm. But they said, now that we have it, let's make the most of it. Let's show something. And it might sound very simple, but it wasn't simple to do. But that's what Matthias Nolcox and John Morton Finney and those people set out to do, and their accomplishments speak for themselves.
Even those of us that didn't go to
Pat, I got
that amazing
experience. Yeah, Pat, I've got to cut you off. We're getting ready to head into a break.
Oh, okay.
We are talking about Attucks High School here on No Limits. My guests are Ted Green and Pat Payne. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about an upcoming documentary on Crispus Attucks High School. My guests are the filmmaker behind the documentary, Ted Green, and Pat Payne, who is in the documentary, who was the first director of the Crispus Attucks Museum, and whose father was a member of the first graduating class. We just learned her mother was a member of the second graduating class, and her uncle is the oldest living Attucks graduate. Pat, you wanted to say something right before we headed to the break, so I want to give you a chance to jump in and share your thoughts.
I was going to say that even those of us who were not blessed with the experience of going to Crispus Attucks on a daily basis, still, those teachers were able to touch our lives, too, because they were our Sunday school teachers. They were friends and colleagues of our parents. And so even with that, we got that same consternation that the students who were there did. And I also want to point out, this is something that just continues to amaze me. The National Crispus Attucks Alumni Group is still in motion. There are still alumni classes back to 1944, I believe, that still meet. The National Alumni Group meets every other month. So that spirit of Crispus Attucks High School is still being carried on. The alumni group works closely with the present Crispus Attucks, which is now a medical magnet high school. So lives are still being touched.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Crispus Attucks High School here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Greg has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you doing?
Just fine. How about you?
I'm doing great. And your guest, it's an awesome show, and I appreciate it. I did have one comment, though. And, you know, I appreciated the school teacher, the history about it, and all the great, not only sport talent, but, of course, the Beasley program, different things that came out of the school. However, I was thinking to myself, I got into teaching because I wanted to be a teacher like they had at my school or the students. But there's no accountability anymore for the students. We tried holding a student to that level of accountability. We'd probably go to jail, teacher. So, I mean, it's just society has changed so much that you want to make a student the best they can be. But now the way with No Child Left Behind, legislation, grading schools, all that goes into that, it's everything I can do just to hold on to my job, let alone make a student or a parent accountable. So I'm so happy that they got that type of rigor that they got through that school. And I'll take my comment, or I'll just go ahead and hang up. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Greg, and the comment. Well, Pat, I'll throw that one your way. You know, I should throw it to both of you because, you know, in some ways, the point of the documentary, I'm sure, is Addicts Through the Ages and how things changed. It's a way of looking at the way not just a school changed, but a community and the whole idea of education. So, Pat, I'd like you to start the discussion, but I want to hear Ted's thoughts on that, too.
The caller was certainly correct. It is a very different thing now in the classrooms. I have been with the Indianapolis Public Schools now for over 50 years. In 2014, after 52 years, but I still hadn't had enough back. So I see exactly what he is talking about. It's very, very hard to do all the things, all the creative things that teachers might do because of the standardized test and because. But you know what? I bet that if this was happening during the time of Addicts' heyday, those teachers would have found a way to still be creative and to still get into those students what they needed to have to persevere in the racist society that we live in, and to somehow overcome what students have to face each and every day now. Ted?
Well, I'll say this. As a father of twin 15-year-olds, I know a little bit about lack of accountability. But I'd say the overall – I've been asked this, and I've thought about it a lot. My overall goal with this film – and this isn't just my film. I need to stress. This is a co-production between me and WFYI, and I've got about a million people helping me like Pat. But our goal is just – one of our goals is to inspire and to inspire children. I would say maybe not to introduce new heroes, or maybe not to create new heroes, but to introduce some of these people, and that makes today's kids maybe want to work a little harder. I mean, again, that sounds very, very basic, but I mean they can see people who are sitting in their seats and with greater challenges than they face now, and went on to do some remarkable things. And I've got a million examples of that. And one thing that's really neat about this is that we are in partnership with IPS, mm-hmm. Who are going to show the film at all of their schools, and we're working in Pat. In fact, Pat's a big part of it. We have a curriculum team that's kind of my favorite element of this whole project to create curriculum to get this out there, you know, and let kids see what happened inside those brick walls over at 12th and Martin Luther King Jr. Street.
Yes, that's one of the most important parts. I think I agree with you, Ted. The curriculum guide is going to be something. And just let me tell you what the goals of this curriculum is as soon as it gets in IPS. The overreaching goals, of the overarching goals of this curriculum guide are to analyze the effects of racism and critique the constructs of segregation, to broaden and champion community understanding and acceptance among all races, encourage educators to investigate local heritage and the lessons that this example can offer to future generations, to foster student pride in their public school experience, and to inspire and empower students to become advocates and change agents and to realize that they too can make a difference in their community. So this documentary will be even more powerful as we implement this curriculum guide in IPS.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Sue Ellen, and Sue Ellen says, I was in high school at Decatur Central in the mid-50s when Addicts was at their peak. When the students started the chant, you knew the game was over and they would win. I would love to see that again. Please ask the Addicts guest if that is in the documentary. Thanks. Ted? Yeah, I'm assuming
you're
the guy.
You know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's the crazy.
Hidey, 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 hidey. Hidey, 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 ho. Oh, skip, bop, beat 'em. That's the crazy song. When they heard that being played or sang by the cheerleaders or led at games, they knew they were in for trouble. The opponent team did. I believe that's what the person is referring to.
Yeah, is it going to make it into the documentary, Ted? Or?
Oh, I think it might worm its way in somehow. We had a fantastic interview with Miss Edwina Bell Payne, class of 1945. She's the one that wrote that wonderful song. And let me tell
inspiration
you,
inspiration by Cab Calloway, I presume.
And she gives full credit, as a matter of fact. Yeah. But she belts it out. She can belt it out. I wasn't around in 1945, but I can't imagine she belted out any louder then than she does now. So no, it was like, I hate to put it this way, but it was almost like a drug. All of a sudden, that song started, and
that's right. And
one side of the gym knew they were winning, and the other side of the gym knew it was time to go home.
Exactly.
Make it to the parking lot before the cars lined up. We probably ought to ask. I've been remiss. When is the documentary going to air?
Well, I'm very proud to announce, this is the first time it's been out there, that it will be August 18th, a Thursday night, at the Madam Walker Theater.
Okay.
We found that very appropriate because the Walker Theater and Christmas Haddocks both opened the same year in 1927, and both are really two of the strongest remaining pillars of Indianapolis's African-American history.
And what is the title of the documentary?
It is Attucks, the School That Opened a City.
Yeah. This is going to be just like, the Oscars. A red carpet and everything. There will be many of the people who are in the film, like General Overton.
General Norris Overton just said he would be flying in. And the children of the first principal, Matthias Nolcox, will be coming from L.A. And Pat, I just got the word that Angela Brown will be in the States then, the great opera singer, and will be joining us. So, there's a lot of work left to be done, and I got to keep my eye on that. But it's pretty exciting, I think.
It's going to be very special. And then on September the 10th, the Christmas Addicts alumni group will be doing a screening at the school. So this is going to be a huge celebration.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Crispus Attucks High School. There's a new documentary coming out about the school's history and impact on the city, state, and nation. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can find us on social media, on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what Kenny has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment. My mother graduated from Attucks, and all her sibling and my aunts and uncles graduated from Attucks in Indianapolis. And on my father's side, it was Roosevelt and Gary. So I'd just like to bring up the fact that Attucks was a remarkable school in those days, but it was not unique. Every major urban city in the United States had an outstanding black school, and in which you, with the characteristics that you've described, in the virtues that you've described about Attucks, because of segregation, of course, but they didn't stop with feeling, feeling sorry for themselves about segregation. They took it, and these schools were also part of a community.
Yeah.
They were neighborhood schools, and they were part of a very supportive and nurturing community. And that's what has been lost over the last 50 years.
Yes.
And I don't think that it's a coincidence. These schools have been intentionally decimated at the same time that the civil rights revolution in this country has really taken hold, and so that these schools no longer work for black kids, unless they're bused in, and they must be bused out of the neighborhood. And so that's been a real travesty over the past 50 years. But I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing that Attucks are being celebrated. It should be. Roosevelt, Gary is a parallel kind of story. These schools graduated kids who went on to become doctors, lawyers, teachers. Julia Carson, the congresswoman, I think she's a graduate of Attucks as well. So
very outstanding
people across this country came out of these schools. But these schools have ceased to work Just one more point. I saw the Michael Moore movie, Where to Invade Next, and he highlighted one of the most well-educated countries in the world. I think it was Denmark, and they brought up the point that they do this through neighborhood schools that they used to see in the United States, and which are no longer here. So it's anyway. Just want to congratulate you for the documentary, but make those points about it.
Thanks very much for the call and for your comments, Kenny.
Yeah, he makes some very relevant points. And I also wanted to bring up that the Crispus Attucks Museum. If there are any listeners that have not been through the Crispus Attucks Museum, we would invite them to do so, because this also highlights the experience of attending Crispus Attucks. And it is located in the school at 1140 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Street.
I want to pick up on Kenny's point there, because, you know, part of what he's arguing is that while desegregation may have been great for the country in a lot of ways and necessary, one of the unintended consequences is that it did affect schools such as Crispus Attucks, that they lost some sense of their identity.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case? I'll start with Pat, but then I want to get Ted's thoughts too.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that. The school is still there, but it's very, very different. It's very, very different than it was when the school opened, and through those first years, it's very different now. The students are there. I don't see the same spirit that was there when my mother and my father and my uncles were attending Attucks.
Ted, your thoughts.
I think that's one of the many nuances here. I mean, you look at, this is a school that in 1927, the African-American community fought hard to keep it from opening. And then later on, a lot of the Attucks graduates I talk to think that they will come out and say integration is one of the worst things that happened. Mm-hmm. I think, but when you talk to most people, they'll agree that the bottom line is separate but equal can never be equal.
Mm-hmm.
But in those abrupt changes, frankly, you lost a generation or two, and still might be ongoing, of, you might say, broken eggs as they're trying to create something better overall. It's been very, very difficult, I would say, on African-American students since Crispus Attucks closed.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to think it's getting better, but a great deal was lost when that high school closed in 1986.
Is it hard? And I'm going to ask this question to Ted, because I think it's a storytelling question, as it were. Is it tough to communicate to young people what Attucks was in its heyday? Because I should say, the backdrop on this is my daughter has played high school basketball. And she played a game at Attucks, and I had to explain to her, okay, you really are in this state. This is hallowed ground here. You are playing at some place really, really special. But it's hard for her to get back into what it meant, A, for Attucks to exist, and then B, Attucks to win those two state championships. And I know this is about more than basketball, but that encapsulated part of the experience, did it not?
Yes, and I think basketball is kind of a symbol there. I mean, there was so much that needed to be overcome that is very difficult. I have a difficult time explaining it to my kids now, what all went in there. But just put it this way: in the 1920s, when Attucks was forged, you had, on the one hand, this was Indianapolis had the largest by percentage African American population among major northern cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the other hand, it also had the biggest Ku Klux Klan presence in the country.
Yes.
I will call that a very combustible.
And the Klan got control of state government.
Mm-hmm.
In the 20s.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a very combustible confluence that forged Crispus Attucks. So I think I try to put myself there a lot, is how difficult it was.
We are talking about Crispus Attucks here on No Limits. If you'll stay with us, I am talking with Ted Green and Pat Payne. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Attucks High School, Crispus Attucks High School, in anticipation of a new documentary about Attucks. My guests are the filmmaker who sort of wrangled the thing together, Ted Green, and Pat Payne, who's in the documentary, was the first director of the Crispus Attucks Museum, whose father was a member of Attucks' first graduating class, mother was a member of the second graduating class, and whose uncle is the oldest living Attucks graduate. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Ann, welcome to the program.
Hello. I wanted to share the story about my mother, Emma Tinsley Randall. My mother was in the first class at Attucks and graduated, and she had started out at Shortridge High School and was, of course, very upset about moving, but she did very well at Attucks. And then she went to Butler University and graduated and was wanting to teach at Attucks, and because of some of the segregation and problems with discrimination, she had difficulty trying to get any type of teaching position. But because of a benefactor named Sue Emma Coleman of Coleman Hospital, which is now Coleman Hall at IUPUI, she was able to get a position at Attucks, and she taught Latin and Greek for probably at least 30 years at Attucks. I even still have some of her classroom materials that she used. People still come up to me that are her students and say, oh, your mother was such a great person. But she really tried to inspire her students to do the best.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that story, Ann.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we would really be interested at the museum in seeing some of those materials that you still have.
Well, it's interesting, I find, also, that shows how far things have gone, that both Latin and Greek were being offered at any school.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was a regular part of the curriculum that isn't so much anymore. We've gotten an email from a listener named Jerry. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry says, an aside, while I thought that Attucks was a great school, the students gave my now deceased neighbor, Dr. Earl Donaldson, principal of Attucks, two nervous breakdowns. Although you think about it, it had to be stressful. For the people working in that school, in that environment, to be dealing with, you know, the oppression that was all around.
That's it.
And then also, you know, attempting to hold students' feet to the fire all the time. Did you pick up on any of that in the reporting and the research, Ted?
Oh, I did all the time. I mean, they were responsible for so much more than I said I would say the average teacher, whom I have great respect for. I'm a son of a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But they had so much more responsibility when you looked at that. Yes, in some ways they had to shelter their students for things, but in other ways they needed to work extra hard, as Pat alluded to, after hours to try to cobble together scholarships. I mean, that's what you can see. It's truly amazing that I can't imagine the hours that the teachers worked really to start putting these students in colleges.
Right.
And African-Americans before Attucks really rarely, at least around here, really rarely went on to college. There was kind of the point of why. The only job I'm going to be able to get is something I can get with an eighth grade education. But that was not, you know, the students who started at Attucks, the teachers made it very clear what their goal was. In fact, the very first principal, Matthias Nolcox, he wanted this to be a college preparatory school.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole point.
And that's probably not what the city had in mind when they established the school.
No, I don't think that's what the city had
given that era and the mindset at the time.
One more point I'd like to make on Matthias Nolcox. Just last week I had the great privilege of going down to Lyle Station, Indiana. It's kind of by Princeton down there by Evansville. one of the earliest African American settlements in the state, you know, right by where the first station on the Underground Railroad was. Mm-hmm. Anyways, the Nolcoxes, they grew up, and I trot out there and ruin the dress shoes and all that, and right just on the bank of the Patoka River in a wetland with their house up on stilts. And it was really something to stand there and think that a kid who was born right here, grew up right here, worked his way through Indiana State, worked his way through IU, worked his way through Harvard, and then started this amazing Attucks tradition. This school is just is filled with, replete with stories like that. And that's why I personally find it so inspiring.
Gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary that's on point here. If you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Gary says, is the point that what was once thought of as racism turned to pride after acknowledging being educated is not easy? Pat.
Would you say that again?
Sure. Please? His question is the point that what was once thought of as racism turned to pride after acknowledging being educated is not easy?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that except to say that racism and pride, I guess, that's exactly what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I would say that racism, that of course still exists, by the way, it took a great deal of pride for them to even deal with the vestiges of what was presented to them.
I'd actually kind of quibble with that point there. I don't think that racism begat pride, and then once that pride came, the racism went away. That racism was there, and it stayed there. You know, keep in mind that despite the 1949 school desegregation law, which really had so few teeth to it. I mean, there wasn't a black student at Crispus Attucks until 1968. I mean, it really took an incredibly courageous...
Or you mean a white
man.
Student.
I'm sorry. Pardon me. There's plenty of black students. A white student until 1968. But it took... I mean, this true efforts at desegregation were fought off by the school board again and again and again. And it really took Judge S. Hugh Dillon in 1971 with just a landmark ruling to expose what had been a tremendously unfair system for a long time. So that pride was there, but unfortunately the racism that begat the school stayed in place for a long time.
Absolutely. And we are trying very hard. You know, I think another one of the callers alluded to this, trying to get the students that go there, that attend Crispus Attucks now, trying to impart the spirit of what was going on when the students were going to Crispus Attucks High School is very, very difficult. Even when we have alumni who come in and they are there all the time to tell their story, it is very, very difficult to see the kind of perseverance that was in the students and the teachers at that time. I don't see it in the school right now, even though the principals are trying very hard. I mean, one of the requirements is that at the beginning of the school year, all of the students have to go through the Crispus Attucks Museum. That is one of the requirements of the school. But still, imparting the kind of perseverance that was there at that time, I don't see it going on now.
We are talking about Crispus Attucks High School here on No Limits. Eric, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you for your taking my call.
Certainly.
I just wanted to chime in. I was listening on the radio, and I wanted to chime in. My name is Eric Holloway, and my mother, Furnace Holloway, was a graduate of the class of 44.
Yes.
And she was quite active and quite proud of the fact that she was a graduate of Attucks. And I just wanted to add my two cents to that. She passed away last month, but
yes, I was there.
She was the treasurer, I believe, at the time, because I've had to go through her effects and pass the money from the class of 44 back out to the members. And so I'm very familiar with class of 44. Her sons went on to be doctors and lawyers and army officers. And so we feel like we're a product of that system, and the pride that was instilled in the individuals from that era.
And Furnace Holloway, by the way, was very active in the 1944 alumni group. Never missed a meeting at Christmas Attic. So, yes, Eric, it's very good to hear from you. I attended the service at Witherspoon.
And thank you for that, and I appreciate that.
And, Eric, thank you very much for calling and sharing that story, and please accept our condolences on your
loss. And you're very welcome. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. We've also gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Miriam. It says, I thought I heard something about a premiere screening at the Walker Theater. When will that take place? That's queuing you up again, Ted. And I guess we should say, is that going to be open to the public? I mean, are there ways that people, if they, you know, if they want to see the film, is there a way they can see it?
It's absolutely open to the public. It is August 18th at the Walker Theater. That's a Thursday night. We are looking to pack the house. We have other events surrounding it. We have a lot of our big-name guests, and there are a lot of big-name guests who will be coming to Indianapolis, especially for this. And so we really were trying to make this a community event. And what I mean by that is not just the black community. We are trying to make this an Indianapolis event. And I think that that's one of the most important things about this show is we're not just doing the show for Addicts grads. We're doing it for the whole city. And I will say a lot of our support has come from throughout the city in creating this film, which is very heartening.
So let me ask this of both of you. What is the thing about Addicts that is the hardest for people to get right now, to wrap their heads around the Addicts experience, the one part that doesn't get the attention that it should? Pat, I'll start with you on that one.
I think that, and I think that the curriculum guide that we are developing will address this. I just don't think that people even understand how the role that racism played in this entire story and what it took to not to overcome it, but to be there in its midst and to still persevere. And that, I think, is what Ted brings out so very well in the film. All of these persons whose lives were touched by Addicts and what they went on to become and how they have touched the lives of others, like General Brooks in the film, General Colin Powell talks about how his life was touched by a General Brooks.
Ted.
So that's one of the things I think it really, really points out.
Yeah, Ted.
I very much agree with that. It's one thing to say, yes, they had to overcome a lot of odds, and it's another thing to really try to get inside how big those odds were. I didn't know that at all when I started this. I remember early on I had a meeting with Dr. James Madison, you know, one of the preeminent historians, certainly in the state.
Yeah.
And he gave me this. I had researched the 1920s a little, and he gave me this sort of sad parental smile, and he said, "You had no idea how bad it was, did you?" I said, "No." And so I think that that's something that we here at WFY and I really strive to bring out is how big those odds were. And I think a real important point to make, and I think a great misconception is that it was the Klan that created the school. And I would say that if you think about it, more unnerving than this misconception that the Klan created the school was the fact that it didn't. Mm. I mean, this school came from all walks of white society here in Indianapolis at the time. We're looking at the Chamber of Commerce. We're looking at the principal of Shortridge. Yeah. We're looking at newspapers that were anti-Klan. We're all for creating a black high school. And so what's really my job as a filmmaker is to make people feel what those initial obstacles were.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Jose. It's a two-part question. It says, is this film going to inspire African-Americans to be teachers, the kind of early teachers of Crispus Attucks? And then the second one is, has the climate of racism improved? in light of the current state of IPS and the backdrop of public school reforms, i.e. charter schools. Pat, I'll let you take the first stab at that one.
They don't want me to get started on charter schools. Why don't you start with that, Ted, and I'll come in.
Okay, we've got, and I should tell you, Pat, because I know you're on the phone, we've got about 3 minutes left. Okay, Ted.
Well, I'm going to be throwing it back to Pat actually here pretty quickly, not because I'm trying to duck the question. It's just that I'm really not an expert in what the educational system is today. I think there's no question that racism still rears its head and maybe in different ways.
Oh, wow.
Pat.
The educational environment that exists now is so complex that I would almost say it works against what we found and what was always prevalent in the Crispus Attucks High School. It is the emphasis on the test, the charter school movement in our city is working very much against, I believe, the kind of environment that Crispus Attucks inspired.
So I got to ask this question. This is just a fanboy question here. I know that this documentary is about a lot more than basketball.
Yes.
But that said, please tell me, both of you, that it is going to feature some interview, and we're going to see some footage of the guy who is still my favorite basketball player of all time, and I would argue the greatest basketball player of all time, Oscar Robertson.
He's very prevalent.
We're going to see more footage of him than has ever been published before in high school. In fact, we're working on the basketball section of the film. My editor, Pete Satry, and I are working on that right now. It's fun. It's exciting. We've unearthed some great footage. And Oscar certainly is interviewed and tells his childhood story beautifully in a way that has not been told before. So I would say that if you're basketball fans, don't be alarmed that basketball won't be covered. It will be covered.
That's right.
Well.
Yeah, It'll be covered. But you're going to hear a side of Oscar Robertson that lets you know that he would never have even been on the court had he not been very serious about his academic achievement, because the teachers wouldn't have had it.
Well, and I think that is probably, well, I'm going to squeeze it. The premiere, again, is August 18th at the Walker Theater. Is there a cost to attend, Ted?
We're still working on that. I if there will be a cost, it will be maybe like the cost of my previous film, which the Slick Leonard film, which was just $5.
Okay.
We want the public to feel welcome and to come in droves if possible.
And they should look at the WFYI website to get the information, WFYI.org.
WFYI.org.
Well, I want to thank both of you. This has been a really, really fascinating conversation. I'd like to thank my guests, Ted Green, who's done a new documentary on Attucks High School, and Pat Payne, whose roots in Attucks are deep and broad. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.